Yes, no, maybe.
You clip the beer.
Oh my god. That's great. What a great way to start the day. Pain. With pain.
Good morning, Pablo. Very stoic.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, wait. No, this is very annoying.
Some me?
Person. No.
I know this is annoying.
So you put it, put it down and it works.
I don't know. I'm sure if it works.
All right.
We'll see.
Yeah.
It's just...
Last time you had it like that as well.
We have to be okay with it being shitty. Yeah. Yeah, like this. I think that's good. Or no?
Yeah?
Who knows? We'll learn.
All right.
We'll see. Okay. So I told you I have a plan.
Yeah, a man with a plan. Yeah. I'm scared and excited at the same time.
So the meta theme seems to be to not tell people what to do, but to kind of...
Well, it's not prescriptive either. We're not telling people what to do.
No, that's what I mean. We're not... but putting a finger on the things that we think are misguided in some sense.
Yeah.
Like, again, like we saw a lot of stuff, worked with a lot of devs, had lots of these conversations off the record and so on. And so the main thing, what we discussed in the first one, was people are like super afraid just to, I don't know, think out in the open, build out in the open, ship the things that they have and so on. And that's something that really grinds my gears, because there's so much cool stuff that's just on some hard disk somewhere. And people are kind of too embarrassed or too ashamed to push it out and so on. And it's like, I've seen this multiple times where someone built something really cool and it's not on a repo somewhere. No one knows that this exists. And then the guy loses interest and it would have been useful. It would have been useful to me personally and so on. And it's just not shipped. It's not like just kind of create repo, push it out. That's all. Like, no one cares that your code is ugly and things are not cleaned up. Literally no one cares. So yeah,
not to start within the first minute with the B word, but the Bitcoin first version.
Oh, my,
could
so
have been
bad.
Like that.
Oh, wow,
it could
so
have been,
bad.
This sucks. Oh, I'm not gonna release this. I'm gonna be so ashamed if I release this.
Oh yeah. Oh wow, it's windy.
It's really windy. Jesus.
Oh, that's gonna be interesting.
Yeah.
No, well, the tunnel will fix it. The tunnel will fix the wind, and then we'll see how it goes. Okay. Now we're gonna know how it is if there's like really strong winds while we're walking. But yeah, as everyone knows now, this is just another Bitcoin podcast. So I would encourage everyone to
Bitcoin of Blossom podcast. We are in a very unique niche.
Doesn't get more niche than that. But yeah, look at the actually first released version of the Bitcoin code. It's like insane. It's insane. It's like it's spaghetti code, main.cpp, like a couple hundred lines. There's like a
half-baked poker game.
Exactly, half-baked poker client in there, and like it's all over the place. So and people DeFi Satoshi, you know, and so and he sent even earlier versions around before that, you know, like in. He did it right. He's just like, hey, look, I built this ugly thing, sent it to some people, and then pushed it out. So fantastic.
It's shit. What do you think?
Exactly. So, yeah. And the second one was that there is no global. Like, one of the misconceptions that people have and that we saw people run into, they try to fix this problem. They try to build a global state, which, of course, is what Satoshi managed, but people, it's, you know, again... Okay. We have to mention it as a Bitcoin podcast. And so what I want to spring on you, what my plan is for today, and this will lead to probably also like EVMs and NutSeps and many other things, but it's, I think, one of the main misconceptions that people still have, both on the Bitcoin side, but especially on the Nostr side, is that you can own data.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I see it like at least once a week, someone is like, and I just saw the book again with like read, write, own, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that's, you know, the new paradigm is that you own your data and you own your online identity and so on. And I think one of the things that we had that we wrote down one day was like, you can't own public data. I would even go as far as to say, data ownership is a complete lie. You can't own data. So I don't know. Can you own the number three? Discuss.
Yeah, I think it's a confusion with the idea of controlling the data and owning the data.
Yeah, what does it mean to own something?
Yeah,
in the first place.
Yeah, I don't know. What does it mean to own something?
Yeah, I don't know. What does it mean to own something in meat space? Like, what does it mean if you own a chair?
Well, whatever? I mean within. What's the phrase?
If you have something in possession,
yeah, that one.
The law? Yeah, yeah. But that means that you can dictate what happens to it, is I guess what it means.
I guess in that
you're
sense,
in charge,
I mean, at the very base,
you control it.
At the very base of things, it's always about the violence, right? Like, what can you defend? So,
That's a good point. That's a good framing.
If I have this chair. And you can, for whatever reason, take it away. Who owns it, right? That's why where the state comes from. You know, I mean, like the idea of the state comes into this paradigm of we are going to externalize the violence so that someone will arbitrate
to resolve ownership disputes.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. But for data, you don't like with. I think data is a very special because you can defend it in a way that doesn't involve violence because you can secure it via private keys. And then how you manage the private keys
Then again, can you own a private key? I would argue no. Like I don't.
No, you can't control it.
It's you can have exclusive knowledge of a secret.
Yes.
And that simulates ownership.
Yes.
And that's the best we can do.
Yeah.
And I think the whole confusion around. You know, what it means to own data, what it means to, I don't know, own your Nostr profile or own whatever. It stems from that people, I think all that, I mean, we keep hitting the same topics. I kind of hate myself for bringing it up again. But the NFT people, that's what they are confused about. You can't actually own a JPEG. You can't own anything that is for public consumption ever. It's like the best you can do is that you have exclusive knowledge of something. That's the best you can do in the world of data. And data is information, and information is like the number three, and the number three is like an idea, and you can't really own an idea.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's, in some sense, all that Bitcoin tries to do is like simulate ownership. And I think we have all these, it's tunnel time, by the way, in case you...
readily apparent.
The wind is gone, the echo is here.
I think what's interesting is that Bitcoin, but cryptography in general, gives us tools to make this idea of defending a secret more robust, gives us more tooling, basically. Like multi-sig, for example, is a good example that, you know, you need
oh,
to...
Oh, absolutely. Time locks as well. It's like, it's a very novel concept.
Yeah, exactly. Shamir sharding. Like, these are tools that allow us to manage a secret and keep a secret in a more robust way.
It's historically speaking, the guy with the longer stick won.
Yeah.
If when it comes to ownership and when it comes to defending property, historically speaking, violence always won. What's new about cryptography is violence doesn't win. You can't. I mean, was it Applebaum or was it even? I don't know who said it, but no amount of violence will ever solve a math problem, and that's what's novel about it, and that's what the whole like sovereign individual thesis is about, and all those kind of things.
I mean, at the end of the day, the key, unless you burn the key is still
somewhere.
Yeah,
but you can also not provably burn it, right?
Yes,
which
yeah.
relates to a lot of the confusions again on the Nostr side. Like, you can't really delete your profile.
Yes.
For example.
We just merged NIB62, which is this make-believe.
It's make-believe, like the profile is gone.
Yes.
But if you still have a copy of the private key somewhere, you can start signing events again and just pushing them out.
The idea is that there is this one event that, regardless of the time of the event or anything like that, you can take around, and it's an instruction... You know, if the signature matches, it's an instruction to the relays to delete everything, basically.
Yeah.
But it's make-believe.
Yeah, it's make-believe, and it's also kind of bad, I think, in some sense, because what if someone takes over your account? it's like, what if you get hacked? What if you're, someone controls your private key that you don't want?
Oh, I'm a firm believer in burning the ship. If your ANSEC is compromised, leak the ANSEC.
Yeah, no, but yeah.
Because it's a complete disorder, because we don't have time in Noster. Noster cannot tell time.
Yeah.
Once the key is burned, you can rewrite anything, you can delete, you can do whatever, right?
Yeah.
So if you leak the key, the whole history of that key is destroyed. Because everything could have been forced.
Yeah. No, it relates to the misconception about the nature of data itself. You just spoke about the destroying of a key and the destruction of data and all those kind of things. And we speak about deleting the data and so on. And it's kind of impossible.
I agree.
Deletion.
Yes.
Like, you can't destroy a chair. You can provably destroy a chair. Like, there's a chair, there's one chair, and you take a sledgehammer and you destroy the chair,
and
the chair is gone.
You have two half chairs.
Exactly. And data works very, very differently. Like,
yes,
you can destroy data. And like, if there's only, if you know for sure that there's only one copy of the data, and you destroy the medium that holds it, then the data's gone. Okay, fair enough. But most data, and especially in a networked world, it doesn't work like this.
Yeah.
Like, computers, I mean, I spoke about this and wrote about this like so many times, I feel like a broken record, but it's computers are copying machines. If you transfer something, you copy it, period. You cannot move data. You can only copy it and delete it. And that's why in a networked online environment, it's so hard to speak about any deletion. It's like, it's all based on trust.
Yeah,
it's like pinky promise I deleted the thing.
Yeah, it's all synthetic deletions.
Yeah.
It's not really what we mean by deletion. It's just like a similar concept, but it's not real.
And all the things we talk about are kind of like that. And that's what we touched on when we first talked, I think. When it's like all our metaphors and the things we have, the memes, so to speak, that we have about this stuff, they all break down because they're all very inaccurate. And I feel like we need new, clearer mental pictures of it. I mean, files and folders are another example. It's completely made up. It's like, what is a folder? You know, it's like, where does it come from? Or like the icons on a desktop or all those kind of things, you know? Or like, I mean, there are these great examples where it's like, no one knows anymore. Like, the kids don't know why the save button had a disk on it, you know? Like, this weird, like,
the
quadratically shaped thing, whatever. No one knows. But that's just how it works. And that's we also talked about, you know, like, the concept of distributed cognition, where it's like, you didn't come up with this stuff. Just like, we didn't come up with English, you know?
Yeah.
English works like this, and there's a reason why we have these words and use these words, and it's all very complex. You don't understand it. No one really understands English. English is way smarter than every single individual that speaks English. And computers work like this as well, and the metaphors we use work like this as well, like files and folders and ports and connections and whatnot. In the end, it's all ones and zeros and so on and so forth. And
yeah,
so
it's all make-believe.
It's all kind of make-believe in some sense. And the same is true for ownership. But I think ownership is so confused nowadays because you can't really own data. You can simulate ownership in some sense, but I think we shouldn't even talk about ownership. We should talk about control. We should talk about, like, who is in charge, so to speak, because that's way more important. And that's also kind of what we mean. That's what we mean when we say you own your data in Noster, so to speak. Like, no one can tell you what to do, or no one can kick you out, or no one can delete it in your name, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, I think the idea of own the data within the context of Noster comes a bit from the what we were discussing at one of our dialogues, not episode, about the authenticity of the data being bare within Noster.
Exactly.
Whereas in platforms,
the
authenticity comes from the authority that says, yes, Gigi said this thing.
Yeah.
And given that the authenticity came from the authority, if the authority decides not to give that data, like, the authority has to control whether it shows that data or it shadow bans the data, right?
You can simulate a bare instrument, so to speak, with that concept. But it all stems, it doesn't really stem from any type of ownership. If anything, it stems from exclusive knowledge of a secret. So if you manage to keep your private key secure and you're actually in control of it, then you can simulate the bearer type characteristics of a chunk of data. Hmm. And it's true in Bitcoin, it's true in Ostert, it's true across the board, basically. Yep. So data ownership is a lie. That's what I'm trying to say. You can't own data.
No, I think the it's true that...
By the way, that's waves.
Yeah, these waves are insane.
It's not cars, like when Fiat Jeff is usually talking. We're not on a highway. But it's like really big waves today. So.
Yeah, it's the wind. The... I lost my train of thought.
It's the waves.
Yeah, it's the waves.
It comes in waves. No, but I think because there's still a lot of people that have kind of Noster derangement syndrome.
Mm, just yes, like very much
there's
so.
Still a lot of people that have Bitcoin derangement syndrome, of course. Like I'm not even talking about those anymore. They are kind of uninteresting. They're all the same now. But we have so many ex-coiners now that kind of, you know, basically criticize Noster for sometimes valid reasons, sometimes invalid reasons. And that's one thing I see over and over and over again with the kind of the misconceptions about what it means to own your data and what it means to where does the freedom that those systems provide you actually come from? Like, where does it actually come from? And we discussed this the last time already a little bit. Like, the freedom implies responsibility, and the responsibility lies in you taking care of your private key, and in an extended sense, on another side, you taking care of copies of your data if you want to. And that's true on the Bitcoin side as well. Like, if you really, really want to take charge, you have to run your own node, keep a copy of the data, enforce the rules, all those kind of things. And that's where that's why you are in charge and why you can be in charge. Mm. That's impossible for all the platforms. Like you don't have a say what happens to you on Twitter, on X, on YouTube, and so on. And you absolutely have a say on Noster.
And to me, that's what's so extremely uninteresting about PubKey.
I know very little about it, by the way.
So basically the way it works is you sign a DNS record, you put it on DHT, saying my data is in this one, they call it home server, essentially it's like a relay kind of. So you sign that pointer saying my data is there, go get it over there. And that's it, right? When you want to write, it's just a REST API, for example. I don't know if it's an actual REST API, it doesn't matter. You just want to publish something, you publish it on that one home server, and that's it. But there are no signatures beyond the DNS record. So you're essentially saying the authority of what data I actually created is given by this one server. You do have the ability of changing the server, and you have to because the DHT key kicks you out. But you have to say, I am writing over here. This one over here can be malicious. They can fake data because your data is not signed.
Yeah.
Like each event, the pointers
are signed. Only the pointers are signed.
Only the pointer is signed. But And
can it point to multiple?
No, it also can only point to one.
That's kind of bad.
To me, that is a very poor design. And the whole idea for doing it in this way is that gives you the ability of keeping the key kind of cold. But you're
cold in the sense that it never leaves your local area network, for example.
Yeah, you don't have to use any client. You don't have to. You don't have to put your private key on each client, right? Like you can use different clients, and you don't have to expose your private key to each one of them because the only thing that you're actually signing is the DNS record. But then you're back to the authorities that this home server. Yes, you can change it if it becomes malicious, but there are so many ways in which the home server can trick you, even in a way where, like, it could just shadow ban you. It could not show your data only to some IP addresses, or it could fake your data. It could say
what usually also happens is, like, if there's only one source for the data, it goes away, and all that remains is the pointers. That's what all the NFT people ran into, where, you know, like, it's hosted somewhere on, like,
you own this 404.
Exactly, you own this 404. It's a link to AWS and all those kind of things. And yeah, you don't own the 404, but it's a 404 now anyway.
There you go.
Yeah, and yeah, what would be the reason? Because that's kind of the ingenious part of the Nostr / Bitcoin architecture, is that you don't rely on one data source, period.
Yeah.
It's like, on the Bitcoin side, you don't rely on any data source anyway. The data is self-reliant, which is the innovation, basically, which is 100%. What proof-of-work provides. And on the Nostr side, it's similar without the temporal component, mm-hmm. and that's why it's kind of like a bearer thing. That's what you mentioned. Like, the important part is that the servers are not only stupid and exchangeable and so on, but that the data itself is bearer. So you don't have to trust whoever gives you the data in that sense. And if you use multiple sources, if you use multiple stupid servers, multiple relays at the same time,
or a pen drive,
yeah. I mean that too. But it's like, if you, I think the ingenious part is like, If one, I mean, we discussed this already, but if one relay goes offline, you don't even feel it. You neither feel it for writing nor for reading.
100%.
And I think that's the right approach. And I think that's also, it's Torrent had these ideas as well, where it's just like it's similar but also different. But it's basically like, it doesn't matter if a thing goes down, the whole system still works. And that's the important characteristic.
100%. And that relates a lot with the, I don't know if we already want to open the door, but with the design of NATSAPs, where, or of NATSACs, of NIP 60 and NIP 61, where the money is the data. Your private key controls that only you can have access to that data. And I recently read...
But that's an important point that I think many, many people don't understand, in the sense that because, okay, so first of all, eCash is bearer, period. Like, the money is the token.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing to really internalize. And the switch that kind of the we kind of went full circle, you know? Because on the Bitcoin side, it's all the public is out in the open. The only thing that's really private is the private keys. And so it doesn't even matter that people know, like, that money moved A to B. Like, if no one else can move it but person C, like, as the next one, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's all out in the open. And with NatSynapse, it's the same principle, in a sense that it's like, if you lock the bearer token to a specific NPUP, it can be all out in the open. It doesn't matter. Like, it's again, it's about the ownership and control part, you know? Like, it's about, on the Bitcoin side as well, we simulate ownership by exclusive control. And it doesn't even matter that where this data is stored shouldn't matter. And I think that's the thing. That's the thing that we landed on so many times. Where the data comes from and where it is stored shouldn't fucking matter. And I, as a writer, for example, like it's, in some sense, we figured all this out a long time ago, like with books, for example. A book has an ISBN number. How you read it, where you get this book, whether it's in digital form or audiobook form, or like what kind of, you know, who printed it and where do you read the information from, shouldn't matter at all. At all. It should matter. If we discuss the book, if a system discusses the book, it shouldn't be an Amazon link. It should be an ISBN number. You know what I mean? And that's what Nostr got right. We're only dealing with, and Bitcoin got right and so on. Like, we only deal with cryptographic identifiers. Where the data comes from doesn't matter at all. Servers should, like, not really even exist in that concept. If it's all USB sticks, it still works. Like, Nostr still works over carrier pigeon. Bitcoin still works over carrier pigeon. And that's the right approach. Like, it doesn't matter if something goes down or whatever. Okay, I'm ranting again.
No, but it relates to so I read, someone wrote this short article about NatSAPs, and from the get-go, they got a lot of fundamental stuff wrong. And actually, the article concludes with something like, relay operator should be very, I don't know, very careful or something like that. Very worried about keeping this data on the risk of becoming money transmitters or something like that. You know, money operator, I don't know, some money broker, something like that. And what they don't get right is that it's data. Like, cashew tokens have been transmitted over wires, over bank wires, on the memo line.
Over emojis.
Over emojis.
That's the thing about data. It can be anything, and you can put it into anything.
In anything. And it will be put in.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why your seed phrase can be 12 words, for example. It's like data and data representation are like, it's, you can represent any data as anything. It's like you can arrange the fucking, you know, like, sand corns here on the beach to, you know, be a Bitcoin private key, for example, or what have you. It's again, I feel like it's those fundamental things that people don't understand. Like in the world of information in cyberspace, all we have is data and the manipulation of data. That's all we have. Period. The end. We don't have anything else.
And you know, from a practical standpoint, what's very, very interesting, like, I've implemented NatSux, the NIP60, the wallet itself, many, many, many times already. And every single time, you know what's the hardest part? Like, number one challenge I get, I mean, number one is the people calling me a shitcoiner because of using cashew. Okay, whatever. Like, yeah, okay, great, perfect. Every single one of the people calling me a shit coiner, every single one is using Strike or Wallet to Satoshi to receive subs. But okay, sure, whatever. It's fine. But the second one is, relays can delete your money. Relays can delete your money. Every single time is, no, but this is super bad because the relays can delete your money. Number one challenge implementing NIP60 is receiving too many tokens, not too few. So the token event where you have the money itself, you want to delete it because you spent it and you moved it somewhere else, and you want to delete it. And sometimes the release will still send you the fucking token.
Yeah. So because now you have one server. You have a swarm of relays, basically.
You throw it around. Yeah. And then the issue is that now you have to do state reconciliation. Like, no, this cash, this token, this proof has been spent. I should not compute it as part of my state. So the hardest challenge is not getting too few tokens. It's getting too much fucking data.
Yeah, of course.
I actually had to change
because if there is no global, that's actually a super hard problem. And you have to kind of, you have to, with the data you get from the swarm, you have to figure out what's going on, and you have to keep a local state at least.
No, so what I actually changed the NIP60 maybe like 2 weeks ago, saying, okay, fuck it, I'm done like doing state recalculation. What I'm doing now is when I produce a new token that obsoletes a previous state, I say, actually, this other ID, don't compute it. This ID is deleted. Even if you get it, fucking ignore it. So now it's like way easier to compute the state. But what I want to stress is that the problem is not that the data is being withheld from you. It's that the data is so fucking easy to copy.
Yeah.
That it just spreads everywhere.
Yeah.
It just spreads everywhere.
And that's usually what data does. That's usually like that's how information works. That's how information works. Information spreads. So that's where, you know, like, information wants to be free comes from, and so on. And that's why it's so hard, so hard to keep keys secret and store them properly, because information wants to spread. It's like it's the only way to move information around is to spread it. And again, you can't prove deletion, and so, like, it's I must have said this like 500 times in the last 10 years, but I'm gonna say the whole thing again. So okay, the difference between an apple and an idea is like an information is like an idea. And the difference is, if I have an apple and you have an apple, and I give my apple to you, you have two apples, I have zero. If I have an idea, and it goes, I have messed it up already, so that's how long I didn't say it. If I have an apple and you have an apple, and we exchange apples, both of us still have an apple. If I have an idea and you have an idea, and we exchange ideas, both of us have two ideas. Hmm. So that's, you can already see just with that information only spreads. It's like, because you can't prove deletion, because all those kind of things, it's like, once your private key is leaked, you're wrecked. That's it. Like, you can't go back from that. It's like some guy probably still has a copy and so on. That's why it's so hard. Like, it must never leak. It's so hard to actually keep it a secret, and all those kind of things. And it all relates to these things. Like that's the ground truth of how information works. And almost all of the confusions and all the issues that we have stems from that. Everything you described up to now stems from that. It's like, it's hard to... Of course you're getting too many proofs. Because the relays are obviously not in sync because there is no global. So you will get stuff that's outdated and you'll get a token that's already spent and all those kind of things. So that's just how it works. That's just how it works.
We've reached the end of our path.
Yeah. It's a state intervention stops us from going further. Such a shame. I'm looking forward to listening to a couple of minutes in the middle when it's like 10-meter waves and strong winds. Like you ranting about nuts absent. No one can hear a thing, probably. But anyway. No ass. What does that mean? Interesting graffitis. No, but anyway, I really want to stress this because that's the kind of... There's another thing I want to touch on. Because there's only information and the manipulation of information. There's only data and computation. It's the only two things we have in cyberspace, period. And we simulate everything else with that. We simulate files with that. We simulate folders. We simulate ownership. We simulate all those kind of things. We simulate bearer tokens and so on. It all boils down to there being data and the manipulation of data. And so we talked a lot about in the courts and so on. It's like, what can you actually sell and what is actually scarce and so on. And compute is actually scarce. The intense manipulation of data is actually scarce. And that's also how we landed on DVMs, where it's like, okay, that's all that DVMs do. And that's why they are universal in a sense, because that's all you can do. It's like data goes in and the novel part is, I mean, the main idea of DVMs and why I think it should be interesting for developers is like, we can actually build something like an AWS now without all the bad parts of AWS. And we can actually build, and I think it will also scale really well. And I think the permissionless nature of it, even though I don't really like that term in a sense, you don't have any walls that lock you out. That's the thing. You can just do stuff and you can just have agents use this thing, for example. And you can just deploy something that runs compute, and because compute is actually scarce, people will pay for it. And we saw this already with like image generation, for example, or also text summarization, those kind of things. All the LLM stuff that's currently the hot shit.
Text to speech.
It doesn't make sense to sign up for a Midjourney plan for a year to generate like 3 images or whatever. It's like, if you already have sets, it's way more sensible to use your NutsApp wallet to query a DVM, like have a DVM marketplace, take care of the thing, and you just pay whatever, like 100 sets for it, whatever it is. And that's where all these ideas came from.
Yeah, to me, when you say that these can be, can do all the stuff that AWS can do, without all the bad things of AWS. The other part that to me is absolutely fundamental, and that's why, to me, NIP 89, like the discovery stuff, and NIP 90, DVMs, are so intertwined. Or rather, NIP 90 depends on NIP 89, and it was kind of by coincidence that they landed together in sequential manner. The idea that you can produce a new service, a new algorithm, or whatever it might be, a new image generation or text-to-speech, whatever service you want to provide, whatever compute you want to produce, and you can just go in and advertise it via NIP 89, and it can be immediately available in any client that supports that specific service. To me, that is absolutely wild, and it's something that AWS simply cannot do. Like, there is no fucking way.
Because they have to work in their permission sandbox, basically.
Like, how would you build a permissionless discovery layer where you don't have to know anything about the person buying the service or providing the service.
You can't do it because micropayments don't work. You would always have to batch it until you land until like 15 bucks or 20 bucks.
Exactly.
That's the main reason.
Exactly.
And because of that, you need KYC and all those kind of things and so on. And so it can't really scale outside of your bounds where you already know your customer and you already have a credit line to the customer and all those kind of things.
Yeah, it's kind of like the what we discussed last week with the introduction of the 402 HTTP code.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like, oh, let's just put like an HTTP. Yeah. Okay, yeah. We'll figure it out next week.
Yeah.
It's like... No. It might look like a fucking simple problem. Yeah. It is a really hard problem.
Yeah,
Because it invites so much complexity. Like solving 402 requires the creation of a blockchain and mining sites all over the world.
Yeah. And you need. I mean, there is also a reason. And Kelly talks about this beautifully, of course. But there is also a reason why eCash never took off because eCash on fiat, basically, like it. It can never be trustless. It's like in some sense it doesn't make sense. Yeah, it would be an upgrade, but it doesn't fix the fundamental issue. eCash on Bitcoin, however, it's a completely different story, and that's why I believe like eCash now that Bitcoin exists and works and we have all this stuff, eCash actually fixes 402.
Oh, 100%.
It actually does, and I think we can already see now where this is going. Coming back to NutsApps, like the superpower of all this stuff, the superpower of cryptography in some sense is that it is self-contained and you can simulate identity, you can simulate ownership, and you can simulate all those things that we just discussed just with cryptography. But the implication is, and that's something that I think lots of people in our society are also still confused, and every time new people come in they will be confused again. The only way it works is if people take the responsibility upon themselves to custody the keys. Yes, we can have fancy constructs with, you know, multisig and frost and other things where you have collaborative custody models potentially and all those kind of things. But everything flies out the window if you don't hold your own keys.
Yes.
Everything flies out the window. It's like we revert to the old model. And that's kind of what you have to consider in your design space if you build something out in this world. Like that's the fundamental truth of the matter. It's like the freedom that those things provide only come if each individual takes the responsibility of holding their own keys, of keeping them secret, and of taking care of, you know, their self-sovereign secrets. I'm ranting again.
No,
I feel like I'm only ranting.
It's interesting because when we started working on the spec for Blossom to do payments in some way, either when you publish something, when you upload something, or when you get something, you can include some payment. And Quentin was working on the spec, and he initially built it with Lightning. So on the HTTP header, there was a negotiation step where you would get a Bolt 11 Lightning invoice from the Blossom server, and then you would pay it, and then you would provide the pre-image on the HTTP header. It was something like that. Which is extremely fucking complicated.
Yeah. And it requires both parties to be online at the same time, those kind of things.
It requires an exchange.
Exactly.
It requires a negotiation step.
It requires the whole dance.
LN URL has the same problem where you have like all this talking and all this exchanging of information. And when we looked at it, it was like, maybe Cashew would be a better fit. And it's literally, you do the get or you do the post and you put the Cashew in there and okay, thank you, goodbye. And that's it. There is no negotiation step. It's here it is.
Yeah.
Here's the proof.
I feel like we figured all this out like over the thousands and thousands of years of civilization. That's why we have coins in the first place. You know, it's like having a bearer token is actually an insane innovation because you don't rely on a central party to tell you the truth of the matter, which is always wrong. Like whatever is on the clay tablet is always wrong because you always have to come together and reconcile.
And it's always political too.
Yeah, of course. And the people who are the entry lines on the clay tablet they are completely bound to the person who controls the tablet. And that's why we landed on coins and then later notes and all those kind of things. But it is having a bare instrument actually solves this problem. And I mean, everyone should know that, like, the market, tapping into the distributed cognition of the market, is actually what makes a complex society work and all those kind of things and so on. And so the money also needs to be distributed. That's what coins actually are and so on and so forth. But for something simple like paying for an API call, that becomes readily apparent again. It's like, that's why I mentioned, like, without the bad things of AWS, AWS is in charge. AWS has the Clay tablet.
Oh, 100%.
Or Visa or MasterCard or what have you, you know? And if they don't like you, they can kick you out. And I mean,
and they do.
They absolutely do.
They canceled my Amazon account. Like,
oh, I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised. Look at you. You look like a terrorist. but that's the thing, you know. And I feel like we learned this over and over and over again over the course of history, and it's having a bearer talking. It is so much simpler. But yes, it requires responsibility. You have to actually figure out, No one thinks about this, you know? You don't take all your wealth in your, like, pocket money wallet with you. Because that's one of the criticisms of NutsApps, for example. It's like, oh no, it's so insecure. Yes, so is the money in your pocket. Someone might rob you. You might lose it. It might go under the couch and then it's gone and you're poor. Oh my Lord, no, what are we going to do? But the alternative is so much worse. The alternative is so much worse. Yeah, you have to take care of your own money. And like, if there is if you have like bars of gold, put them in a safe, you know, for example. Like, don't carry them around in your back pocket. You know, it's like, well, anyway, again, this is it feels cathartic to rant about this stuff.
No, but what I find absolutely fascinating is the fact that had we worked on Blossom before any type of eCash was really available, The solution would have been very hard. The solution, like, even assuming Lightning is there, the solution of having this negotiation to get the Vault 11, or even if you go Vault 12, right? It's kind of the same. You need to get a payment request in some way, and then send it, and then send it pre-image. Like, that, there is a lot of complexity, and there is a lot of interactivity there.
And there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong.
And there's, like, a lot of, like, stuff that can go absolutely, and we know that
you go back and forth like 15 times with this handshake. If any single connection or any peer drops, then it's like you have to start all over again.
Yes.
Everything fails.
And that state that you need to control, and you need to, okay, how do I gracefully handle this error? It is a lot of complexity, and now we just reached for the tool, and the tool was there. And it's so simple. It literally is. I think just a
here's
payment
cash.
Here it is. Yeah. It is so simple. Yes, you don't send one Bitcoin there. It's not for that. Send, you know, 1,000 sats or one sat or whatever. And everyone has to model the risk in whatever way they see fit.
And people absolutely can. People absolutely can figure this out and model the risk, as you say, and so on. That's why people are okay with running around with money in their pocket, and they're just gonna take whatever they need for the day or for the next 2 or 3 days or whatever. It's like, it's not a, I feel like we people, you know, contrary to popular belief, like, people are capable, I think, to figure this out. Just allow them to give them the tools and give them space and time to learn, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing, since we already opened the topic. Last night, Kali, which is to me one of the coolest things about NutsApps, Kali said something like, it's really cool that you know the SAP is there without waiting for the Lightning node to respond, to publish the event with the SAP receipt. So the way SAPs work, Lightning SAPs, they work is you say, I want a SAP Gigi. I look at, okay, what his loot 16, his LN URL or whatever. I talk to that. I get, after some negotiation, I get a payment request.
Which makes them even more trustless. You don't have to trust...
That was my point. My point.
You don't have to trust whoever is signing the message that you got sent and those things.
And actually, handling the validation of Lightning SAPs, it's really hard. Like, if you read the spec, there are so many steps. And the signer of the sap is not the recipient, it's not the sender. Yeah,
it's Albi.
It's Albi. It's either Albi or Primal or Wallis of Satoshi. That's it.
That's all we have.
And it's so weird. And I actually re-implemented, I refactored saps on Olas yesterday. And I had a bug. And the avatar, the icon that I was showing as the sender of the sap was the supper. So I was seeing a bunch of Albi icons.
Okay.
Because I was getting the wrong, because I was using the pub key of the person publishing the sap receipt, which is wrong. And you're not waiting, like when you send the sap, you send the payment, and then you just wait to see if you get a sap receipt. And with this is, if you publish the sub, that is the sub receipt. Like the publishing
again,
of the money is
it's bearer, basically. Bearer. And that's I think the issue is that all you have is data and the manipulation of data. And so the best you can do, the best we can do, and I think we should do it everywhere we can, basically, is like you can simulate ownership, so to speak. You can simulate bearer tokens with public key cryptography. Hmm. But again, that implies that you are actually in control of the key. Otherwise, right, everything goes out the window. Then we're back to like Facebook and Twitter and whatever. And so if we manage to build this new world and we build tools that make it easier to actually, you know, hold your key securely and so on, and I think we're getting there. Like I love Amber, for example.
Oh yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm
the UX of Amber.
It's great.
And, absolutely,
and you actually you have a secure enclave, and your key is only in there, and you have a sign. It's like for people who don't know what Amber is. It's
for iOS people.
For iOS people.
Like
for all
myself.
The Apple fanboys. Oh my lord! it's like a hardware wallet in your phone. It's like the hardware is in your phone. You know, so kind of. MVK is gonna hate me for saying this, but anyway, that's how you can think about it.
To this anyway.
Ah, no, like he does his own boring thing where he reads change logs for 3 hours, and he doesn't listen to anything else. That's like, that's fine. But anyway, it's if you can do a bearer thing, you should do a bearer thing. Mm, because everything else implies keeping track of state, implies keeping track, in the worst case, of like a quasi-global state, all those kind of things. It implies negotiation.
Authority.
You fall back to credit and authority in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can simulate, if you can do bearer, do bearer. That's it.
So when during Miami, the Miami conference, they had like the big screens with in the expo area, and they were showing SapLife, and someone started publishing a bunch of fake saps, which are, it's really hard to identify.
Yeah.
It's really, really fucking hard.
Did Carmen do a sap of like more than 21 million Bitcoin or something? That tells you that something's wrong.
it's the famous inflation thing. The 2010 inflation bug. So what was my solution? Like, because I was at the conference, you really cannot demonstrate that the data is that the SAP is real in Lightning SAPs. What was my solution? Like, my solution was literally to just whitelist a bunch of SAP pumpkins.
You became the authority. You're the authority, and you gave Albi and Wallet of Satoshi.
So Albi is real, Wallet of Satoshi is real. What happened? The self-custodial Lightning, the people that were doing it right, were not showing up on SapLife.
That's the issue. You turned yourself into into the BIS, basically.
But I didn't have a way of saying this is a real SAP, even within Web of Trust or whatever. Like, there is no way.
Those are actually hard problems.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that one in particular is unsolvable.
Yeah. So why do you think people hate NotSaps so much?
I think most people love them. It's just a few people. I mean,
some loud people.
Some very loud people. Okay.
I think it's a natural evolution in some sense of all the stuff that was built out so far. Because in the end, it's like, what do you want to have happen? And I think what's one of the superpowers of any cryptographic system in terms of anything that uses cryptographic identities is like you one click create an account. That's it. You generate, all you have to do is generate a key. And again, like I spoke about this a million times from the Bitcoin side. The power of Bitcoin is like you can lock yourself into a bathroom, you can flip a coin a couple times, and you walk out with 12 words, and you can. That's it. You're a Bitcoiner, basically. You can receive money, you can spend money, all the things, and so on. And you don't, like, in some sense, you wouldn't even need a computer. You wouldn't even need, like, you only need a way to do math, and you need some communication channels to someone. But you could be in prison, theoretically, you know, and you could basically, again, with carrier pigeons, send the data packets in and out and all those kind of things. And through the power of public key cryptography, all this stuff works. And that's insanely powerful. And I mean, Bitcoin shows how powerful that is. And we actually know people like Charlie, for example, to name drop him. He had to leave Venezuela with his family and so on. And Bitcoin saved his life. And he's one of the guys who actually did this. 12 words in your head, cross the border. No one knows that you have anything or any wealth, and it literally saved his life, and he was able to build up another existence in another country and so on.
Yeah, in Nashville, there was at the HRF event, there was this person that was supposed to come but couldn't come because of the situation in South Lebanon. And he mentioned that it was the second time that this had happened to him, where he has to overnight all of a sudden just leave his hometown with his family in the middle of the night. And apparently that had happened in whatever, like 2013 or something like that. And he was mentioning how bad the situation had been in the last couple of weeks. He was in the north of Lebanon when he remotely called in. And he was mentioning how this time it was really bad, but it was incredibly better because he had all his money in Bitcoin. So he didn't, I mean, he lost.
One worry less.
One, a very important worry. Like, how do you provide for your family when you don't have any money? It is a massive improvement, this idea, this ability of just saying, just go. I told my wife.
That's by the way, like, I really hope that very soon, and we're getting there, like, with. The daylight computer people have the right idea, for example, and a SAP store is getting there as well, and so on. But I really hope that in the end, like, if you remember to have 12 words in your head, you pop out somewhere else, you get a new phone, and you derive your industrial seat from that, for example, and everything is there again. You have everything again. You have your whole like online identity. You have your whole like your wallet system, your ecosystem of apps, all your settings, all those kind of things. Like every time I switch phone, I lose my mind for like 3 weeks because most apps they don't allow you to easily sync your setup in some way. You know, like you have to start from scratch and set everything up again. And literally start from scratch. And on the monetary side, of course, like that used to be the default. With Bitcoin, you absolutely don't have to start from scratch. You have 12 words in your head, you go somewhere else. Everything is still there. Everything still works. And that's the fucking superpower. And I think that's why NutSnaps are so insanely important. Because the complexity, like, they remove so much complexity. Yes, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. There's different trade-offs and so on.
No solutions.
No solutions, only trade-offs. But it is so awesome that you can click a button and you immediately receive SAPs.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that this already blew the minds of some people on the OLAS site because they talked about it publicly, you know, like they posted about it where it's like, oh my God, what do you mean? Like what just happened? Like they immediately are able to get SAPs. And that's so powerful. Everyone who ever onboarded someone to Bitcoin, they all used Wallet of Satoshi because of the powerful "wow, it just works" effect. And now we have that with, you know, better you don't have to trust one provider fully. Like, you don't have to trust Wallet of Satoshi fully. I have to catch my breath. Going upstairs was a mistake.
To me the NIP 60, the NATSAC stuff, it is so fucking cool. It like when you.
But who will run the mints?
Who will run the mints? Yeah.
how are we going to manage without state subsidies?
It's super interesting because as I was working on this stuff, I understood it conceptually and I'm like, oh, this is like a really cool idea. And the whole reason why I started working on that is because of Primal. Like, I really like the flow of Primal, of where you create the account and you do click, 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 like KYC, click, click, click. Which, you know, all the love, because you...
It's like you said for, I don't know what you mentioned last time, the stuff you looked at, it's as good as it can be. The flow is as good as it can be if you're forced to do KYC.
Yes, if you're forced to do KYC, it is as good as it can get. But it kind of opened the door of what does it feel like for the wallet to be right there.
Yes.
You don't have to pair it.
Yeah.
You don't have to install this other app and then do this other dance and this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, again, I think even if it were to be self-custodial, if you don't know what you're doing, if you're just blindly copying data around and you have no fucking clue what's going on, is it self-custodial? Like, there is this wallet that I actually really like. It has this very normie-friendly onboarding flow for inheritance. And the last flow is upload your backup. So it's like a multi-sig. They hold whatever, one key or two keys or whatever. So they don't have quorum. But as part of the flow is upload your backup to check that everything is okay. Yes, I mean... I'm guessing they are good guys. I know they're not going to keep...
So the backup is not encrypted, and it's like...
No, you're just literally just sending to make sure that you did everything right.
You send your key, and they think you promised to delete it after.
And then they promise to delete it.
Oh, really?
I don't think that they're keeping it, but...
But that's the issue.
Really,
that's again, that's the issue.
That
you can't prove deletion. So it is pinky promise.
It is pinky promise. Yeah. So even if it's not self-custodial, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. So you could be fucking yourself.
Yeah, of course.
The Primal thing. To me, that flow was so smooth. And I think they've executed on the product really well. And the wallet is phenomenal. And I wanted something like that.
Yeah. And the thing is also, with Primal, and also with Wallet of Satoshi to some degree, but with Primal in particular, you can have a taste of what it feels like if your money, if your wallet follows you around.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
It doesn't matter if you use it in 5 different phones, and it doesn't matter if you switch a different phone. You punch in your NSEC and everything's there.
Yes.
And that's such a superpower. And it's I think that's NutSaps hit the sweet spot of all of that, I think. Like, I think from a trade-off perspective, NutSaps are fantastic. Again, like, don't store your whole wealth in it and so on, and they have their issues and so on. But it's not, because a lot of people will say, oh no, it's custodial. Yes, in some sense, but also no in another sense. Because the mint cannot selectively remove you or selectively censor you. It's all or nothing,
yes.
Which is different than what we usually think about in a custodial sense. And that's what I mean with like, or what we also mentioned. We're missing the words.
Yeah.
The metaphors break down.
Yeah.
There is not... And just custodial and non-custodial. There's an in-between.
Yeah.
Also, it's just like collaborative custody. It is in-between. It's like, it's still self-custodial, but it's, you know what I mean? Someone else also holds the key and so on. And I feel like in a mint setup, especially in a multi-mint setup, it's similar. It's very similar, where it's like, it's not all or nothing. It's like, you can't be completely debanked. You can't be completely censored. You can't be, it's selectively targeted and so on. It's... Again, like, the mint knows nothing about you. The mint is blind towards its users, and that's something that most people, I feel like, don't really understand. And they should. It's like, it's the main value proposition, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's the innovation.
But also the experience, like, so Berberica is integrating NatSucks and NatSubs in Chachi. And I've been playing with the beta version that he's working on now. And it is so fucking cool, man. Like, it is insane. I have Olas open on one side of my screen, and then I have Chachi on the other side of the screen. I am looking at my wallet, my NatSack wallet on Olas, and I sub someone from Chachi, and Olas immediately reflects that I spent some money.
The data is the token. It's the SEP. It's all bearer.
But it's so what? And you know, like the first thing that shocked me about Noster when I first started writing, like within the first 10 minutes of writing Noster code, was I wrote this thing. As a test of changing my profile picture or my name and whatever, right?
The immediacy.
Yeah. And IPC, inter-process communication. I used to read entire books about IPC as a kid. Yeah. And you know, IPC is like fucking music. It is a very complex computer science problem. And you write code in Noster. And it's by default it's solved.
Yeah.
By default it's solved.
If you build it right.
If you build it right.
If you build it right. And that's what we saw over and over again. Like once you build out a backend and once you introduce a server in the middle somewhere, all of that goes away, all of that falls apart.
Absolutely.
So you actually have to lean into the Noster paradigm to get all this stuff for free.
That shocks me so much about all the people that want to build REST APIs. Around Noster, it's like you're like the website is fucking destroying. Amazing. Yeah. Like, like you're seeing the event being changed in your default way of getting your data. You're seeing the profile changing or whatever information is changing or your wallet balance changing. It's so fucking cool. Like, why are you breaking it? Like, it makes no sense.
And also, it doesn't matter how well designed your thing is. At scale, this stuff doesn't work.
That's why, 100%.
Like on GitHub, for example, or wherever, if you change your profile picture or whatever, they will show a message. It might take like, you know, like 24 hours to propagate through all the, you know, views
all the
until your like your fucking profile picture is changed. And that's on all large scale systems. That's the thing. Like that's physics. That's how data wants to spread and needs to spread, but it also takes time. And if you have all these central authorities and these central servers, they need to make sure that the update is legit. They need to make sure that, you know, all of this stuff is propagated and so on, and you have all this caching and all the things and so on and so forth and so on and so forth.
And all that complexity is what you invite when you're trying to create a fake global state of the system.
Exactly.
It only comes because you have that appeal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you for and that's I was listening to a friend I was listening to someone on a podcast last night.
You can dox them. No one is listening to this.
yeah, that's true. No. It's not a friend. he was saying that that Noster is not even attempting to solve the problems. That this stuff that they're working on is solving the problem, or at least is trying. And that Noster is not even trying. Noster gave up. And it's this idea of we can engineer everything. You know, we are masters of the universe because everything is synthetic anyway. So we can solve everything. There are no trade-offs.
Yeah. It's lots of shitcoin I said this as well. There are no constraints.
Yes.
We can do absolutely everything. We can solve stuff perfectly. Because there are no constraints.
That was the grand invention of proof of stake on Ethereum. Remember that Vitalik said something
like, "Oh, we're not bound.
We're no longer bound to the laws of physics.
We're no longer bound to physical law. Like we can do anything now.
It's
literally make believe now. It's so funny how this evolved, by the way, because there is now literally like I don't know, like 20 million coins on CoinMarketCap, and it's like no one is even pretending anymore. It's just like there's the physical reality of Bitcoin, and there's everything else.
Everything is complete bullshit.
and that's what I like about Noster so much. It really leans into the nature of information itself. Mm. It really leans into the nature of information itself. So it doesn't try to produce a global state. It doesn't try to be perfect. It's like the stuff is messy. If you see this, you see it. That's by the way, that's why it is my profile banner pic. It's one of the best memes I ever saw. It's like, you know, it's it's from Rocky, right? Like if he dies, he dies. It's before the fight, and someone put an ostrich on top, and says like, if he sees it, he sees it. That's an ostrich. Like it's like there's no guarantees that you're gonna see what I put out, but if you see it, like you're gonna see it. It's like and there's also nothing I can do about it. It's like I can, you know, like pinky promise request for deletion, but it's like, you know, I'm not sure if they already exist, but there is gonna be relays that only keep the deleted events, just like, you know, like Twitter deleted, sure, and all those kind of things.
Oh yeah, for
and
sure.
So like all the embarrassing stuff is gonna be in one relay, neatly stored forever. And that's just how it works. That's how information works. And pretending otherwise is very disingenuous. And you will, if you, and that's the thing. That's why I'm kind of, you know, like, I don't know what the right adjective is, but if you lean into the Vitalik way of doing things, like there is no objective reality, everything is made up and physics doesn't exist, you will run into problems. Hmm. You will run into intractable problems. And just like with like we mentioned, the people that try to make a global state happen in Noster, you will run into intractable problems.
Oh, 100%. I think once you start going for those, solving those unsolvable problems, you end up creating so much complexity, like you add complexity on top of complexity. That's why, I mean, Ethereum looks the way it looks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredibly complex.
Or to keep on the Noster side, another thing is like, you cannot give people the same flexibility and freedom while holding all their keys. You can't do it. You can't solve this problem just by doing that. Should we turn around?
Yeah, let's turn around.
if I go up more, then I'll just die.
It's hot as well.
Let's go back into the wind. Then it's like it might cool us down a bit. But yeah, I guess that's the overarching theme here, right? Like there's so much confusion because people think that there is perfect solutions to those things. And what we are trying to point out is like there's no solutions. There's actually only trade-offs. But you have to be crystal clear about the problem space and that there's various things that you just cannot solve. And I think the first three or whatever, like I think it hits at the core of a lot of the things that we saw. It's like you cannot have a global state in a distributed system. The only thing that can emulate that is Bitcoin itself. So you need proof of work and all those kind of things and blah blah blah. But other than that, you just can't have it.
And just because Bitcoin is not pretending to keep state outside of the system.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the state of the system.
I mean, the Oracle problem also, you can't solve it.
Yes.
It's like Bitcoin solves the Oracle problem via the link of...
Well, Chainlink did solve it. Because Chainlink 1 did not, because it had the Oracle problem, so then they introduced Chainlink 2. Did you know this?
No.
It's insane, man. Like, when they were faced with the idea of Oracle collusion, so the first idea was that you have all these oracles and then you make like a, I don't know, you grab four of them and you say, okay, well, now three of them need to collude in order to lie to me, and they can, so okay, let's introduce a second layer of oracles that are like master oracles.
Ah, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah. Problem solved.
Yeah, that we absolutely trust. Yeah, 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 yeah. That's how it always works. That's how it always works. Yeah, and like again, like the nature of data itself. Like you can't really own data, and you can't also prove deletion of data. Hmm. It's like if you actually understand this, like because a lot of the systems that I see that people try to build, they are very disingenuous about this. It's like, you know, pinky promise we deleted it and so on. Or it's like they will talk about data ownership without even kind of realizing what that means or what it implies, or that like data ownership is a lie in some sense. It's like that, again, like you can simulate ownership by keeping a secret, like exclusive knowledge is what simulates ownership in the world of data. Hmm. But that implies that someone needs to be responsible to not leak the secret, you know? And again, like, I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record and we always talk about the same things, but it's actually important. It's like, and you can't abstract that away. It's someone has to be responsible for the secret. And if that someone is not the user, then the user is not in charge, period.
Yeah, yeah, I have the impression, I'm wondering if you have the same feelings or if you have more information or knowledge about it. But do you think that this intention of abstracting everything, all the complexity away, is it new? Did it exist 300 years ago?
I mean, I think in some sense, people lost a lot of self-reliance, in some sense. Because society works so well and a lot of the things are taken care of, that's definitely part of it. But I also, I really think it's, we have to give people some credit and users some credit. Like, people can figure it out. And in some sense, I think we just have to build for those that are willing to take the responsibility, offer these options, build those tools, and educate as much as we can about the drawbacks of not being responsible for your online life and not taking control of your destiny in cyberspace, so to speak. I think it will be more apparent as time moves on, like as more of your identity and your existence moves online, which is, I mean, has been happening for the last, I don't know, 20 years plus. But people really care. I mean, the most important thing that people possess nowadays is their phone. Your whole life is in your phone. And a lot of people build their existence around whatever, you know, their YouTube channel or what have you, or around certain online communities and so on. And I mean, times are so volatile now where, you know, people are actually getting debanked and deplatformed for very benign things. You know, like voicing opinions that, I don't know, there's only two genders, for example, or what have you, you know.
Terrorist!
Absolute label, like enemy of the state, terrorist, and so on. And I think this will, like, even with the political change that just happened in the US and so on, that will just continue. Because if we have systems where someone in the middle is in full control, this control will be exercised. If is a block button, the block button will be pressed. If there is a, you know, the platform this person button, the button will be pressed. I think in some sense, it's what Satoshi figured out with Bitcoin. It's like, if there is a printing press, the printing press will be used, because if there will be a war or emergency or whatever, big enough to mess with the monetary supply, to find an excuse. And that's actually why gold was used, because gold moves the question of monetary policy from the realm of politics into the realm of physics. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin does the same.
Exactly.
So it removes humans from the equation. And I think we have to make the same move in kind of all of cyberspace in some sense. And Nostr makes this move for your online life in some sense, like for your address book, for your profile, for your identity in some sense, you know, for your, the stuff that you put out, the content that you put out, and all those kind of things. And so I think it's going to be the same as it was on the Bitcoin side. If you have to flee from Venezuela because otherwise you'll, you know, starve to death in the next 2 weeks, I don't have to explain why Bitcoin is interesting or important to you. Like, you get it. If you got wrecked enough, you get it. And I think on the Nostr side, it's going to be the same thing. It's like, if you got deplatformed 5 times because of the videos you produce or whatever, you will figure out what kind of system is resilient enough that you can, you know, keep living your life and keep doing what you do without this happening again and again and again.
Yeah, we also discussed this. I think Nostr will shine not for the lack of pain. It will push people into Nostr because they get burned. But I think the vast majority of people will come because the experience is just better.
Because it's awesome.
It's just fucking better. It's really hard to see it.
I feel like we're kind of close to that, because there is no... And also because of NutZaps. And I think because of DVMs.
Yeah, I think
Because I think with LLMs and all the AI stuff and so on, you need something. And people are figuring this out right now. You need something. You need an underlying substrate for AI agents that is actually open and that includes money in some sense. That so that the agents can pay themselves and collaborate and
find each other.
Yeah, and also limit themselves. Like, yeah. You need to give those agents budgets, for example, and those kind of things. It's like, yes, compute is scarce and so on, but still, you need marketplaces to figure a lot of these things out. And Nostr provides the ground, so to speak. It provides the physics, if you will, for this ecosystem.
Yeah.
And it can't work in a closed system, like for all the reasons we mentioned and so on. But yeah, I ranted so much now that I'm close to that's like we don't have a limit on this, but it's like after like 60 minutes or so I die of heat stroke, and that's like it's a good place to end, I feel like.
It's only going to get worse because we're going into the summer, so
oh yeah, it's gonna get hotter. But yeah, no, I feel like we're two old guys sitting on the lawn and screaming at the kids.
Yeah, so sometimes I think a little bit about that, in the sense as we are recreating a web that is far less permissioned, which is where we grew up in, right? It looked a lot more like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the GeoCities and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
that's one thing that we mentioned as well, and I think actually in the first cohort, but I think I mentioned it a couple of times. I think we have to be careful, and it's not even my line, but neither nostalgia nor utopia. Mm. Like we must not make the mistake of being nostalgic about GeoCities or MySpace or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And rebuild it exactly and so on. But it had a lot of good things.
Yes.
Just like all traditions, they have a lot of good things. and also, it's not going to be utopia. I think that's a lot of the Bitcoin has got wrong in some sense. It's like Bitcoin is no utopia, not at all. It's like it's you actually have to take responsibility to enjoy the freedom that Bitcoin brings you. And taking responsibility is not utopic. It's hard. It's like you have to put in the work and you have to actually be responsible for those things and so on. And the same on the Nostr side. It's not a utopia. It's not like, you know, you just lay on the couch and get fat cake all day long. It's like you don't have to do anything. You actually have to put in some work into Nostr to enjoy the freedom that it brings you. It's like you depending on what you do and who you are and how you use it, if you're a power user, you might want to, you know, like run your own relay or even run your own mint or what have you, to enjoy all this stuff. And so I think that's also something that we have to really kind of be more outspoken about in some sense, because a lot of people that are really bullish on this stuff, they will tell you that, oh yeah, it's going to be utopia, everything is going to be amazing. So, no, it's like there is no utopic solution. There isn't.
I think that's where I was wrong with building Insect Bunker. It's thinking you can not reach utopia, but like approach utopia, you know, and I was just abstract away the key. I was so young.
One and a half years ago.
Yeah.
Learned a lot. Yeah, I think one of the things that it's very hard to figure out beforehand, but there's some kind of solutions that make stuff worse over time, and there's other solutions that make stuff better over time. And like Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining is a great example. I think Bitcoin mining, in essence, it gets better over time. It gets more distributed. And we had this metaphors for a long time. It's like it finds the stranded energy and all those kind of things, you know. And it finds a nice equilibrium. It's not going to eat up all the world's energy, for example, and so on. It's like
I read it in some report.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By 2020, like, we're going to be fucked.
By 2020, it's like we're going to boil the oceans, everything. But it's very hard to know kind of beforehand. Ensec Banka gets worse over time.
Oh, 100%. For example.
And I think I just looked just a couple of days ago. I posted out in Nostr as well. It's like, what are your thoughts on passkeys? Half the people didn't understand the question. That was funny as well. I wasn't talking about YubiKeys and 2FA people. No, the passkeys basically, Google and Apple and 1Password and also the YubiKey people, they really push it. And it's basically, it's public key cryptography, but the private key, you're not really in control. It's either on your device or it's with Apple or in 1Password, and you can't get it out. So in some sense, you're not in control of your private key because people are bad with keys and they can leak them. So I understand where it comes from. And I'm not saying they suck. It's like it's a different kind of trade-off again and so on. But I think passkeys are going to get worse over time because it's going to be in like one or two data silos.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And
I mean, it's starting there.
It's starting there also. Yeah, and it's also it it's, you know, it's this FIDO alliance. It's like the three biggest players come together. We're going to do it like this now. It's going to be amazing. No one has to use passwords ever again. No one knows how this stuff works, basically. It's very confusing for users. And you're just locked into the ecosystem forever, basically, in some sense. That I think might be the result. Unless,
100%.
Unless there are some innovations and some, I don't know. And it's also the
thing. I think that's the thing. You cannot innovate that. Like, you cannot solve, you cannot square, what's the phrase? You cannot square that circle.
Yeah.
You cannot solve that.
Yeah.
Like, you either have the key and you control the key, or someone else is controlling the key.
And it's, again, it's such an impossible problem, because it's the what we landed on the authentication world is like basically something you know and something you own and something you are. It's basically it's a password and a YubiKey and biometrics, okay? It's something like that. And that's the best we can do. That's like, it's very, very hard to attack all that and steal all that and so on. The problem with biometrics is, and that's what most people also have no realization of, biometrics are usernames and not passwords. And the Chaos Computer Club people, they made this readily apparent when they, like, you know, got a photo from fucking Angela Merkel or whatever, and from the photo, they reverse engineered the fingerprint and they unlocked the phone. And you can actually do that. It's a high-res photo, like cameras are good, and you get all the lines and then you print it out and then you use some wax or something and so on. It's not even that hard. Like, you can DIY that stuff. And then you just, you put the little film over your own finger and you touch the fingerprint sensor and the phone unlocks. So biometrics are usernames, they're not passwords. And passwords are actually great. People suck at doing passwords, but people will also suck at doing private keys and pass keys, for example, you know. And the thing is, like, okay, everything is like, let's say you have the one on device pass key, and then, you know, like, you lose your phone, like, you're insanely wrecked, you're mega wrecked, you have to call Google.
yeah. So in Apple, I don't know if that's the way, I'm guessing it's the same way in Google. In Apple, your pass key is all stored in the cloud.
Sure. No, of course. But someone, the secret has to be somewhere. Like,
exactly.
The stuff on the cloud. Like, it's turtles all the way down. And that's also, we everyone always runs into the same problems. And on another side as well. Okay, what about key rotation?
Yeah.
Then you have a master key and you derive the thing from the master key and so on. Okay, what if your master key gets stolen? Because it's always about compromise and so on, and then you timestamp some things. Okay, I'm still in control of my key, pinky promise, and I whitelist the next other keys that I set them up in advance, because if my key gets compromised and so on and so forth. But it's all based in pinky promise because of all the things we talked about. Because you cannot prove deletion of a key. There is no link between the real world and the world of data. There just is none. So if someone steals your key, there is no difference between you pretending your key got stolen, or you pretending you lost your key, or someone actually stealing your key, or someone actually losing their key. It's the computer system cannot know.
Yeah. That's the issue.
You can't solve it. So don't pretend that you solved it in some magic way.
I think that's why this idea of having like a social key, account, whatever, identity recovery. Yes. It's like but retarded as fuck. But it's the reality, right?
It's left side of the bell curve.
100%.
And which is why it works. But we also have to differentiate between identity and authentication.
When I wrote that NIP 41, with the key rotation and the pre-signing of the whitelisting of the key, when I wrote that, the hardest part was, how do I name this NIP? And I went with key rotation. Both of those are wrong. Identity migration. I think I ended up landing on identity migration, which is also wrong. It's just like a pointer.
Yeah. Exactly.
But naming it was so hard, because, I mean, rotation also means a bunch of things, right? So it's a very problematic term, because it actually has a meaning within like PGP, and you know, like it means something.
Yeah.
And what I wrote there is not rotation.
Yeah.
But to me, the more I think, and I know that when I wrote that you extremely favored that part of the NIP, was you should say, Gigi says, oh, Pablo's league is compromised, Pablo's new keys. This one, people know that we have a relationship. So they say, oh, well, Gigi said that this is the new key. Okay,
That's how it already works.
Yeah.
Look at the best use case for this is American HODL. Fucking American model.
That's fucking
it,
A, yes.
It shows you how key rotation actually works in the real world. It's like, this is Twitter pro for people that are not in the know. He got booted off Twitter, I don't know, like every, 17 times.
Every
like
every 2 weeks.
And it was very easy. Like, he comes back and it's like, it's me, bitches. And you either trust that statement or like someone who knows him in person will tell,
he's
no,
just
it's
so
actually
out of band.
It's actually him. It's actually
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
and that's it.
I called him.
And that's
it's
it.
Good.
And that's
okay,
it.
Okay, and boom.
And it's actually not that big of a deal. It's not that big of an issue. That's purely speaking from an individual perspective. I realize, like, if Nike or like whatever big company gets their key hacked or whatever, then it's a different situation. But I think we can also get there, like with all the stuff that's happening around Frost and
mm-hmm,
so on.
Yeah,
it's just a quorum.
Yeah,
kind of
and all that complexity doesn't need to live on the protocol.
Exactly.
Of how do we do signatures?
Exactly.
And how do
exactly.
we do, they can just take that all that complexity and put it in. I know. A company that is within us, because they told me when I was working on InsectBunker that they had built something like that for themselves, where they yeah. had social media managers that could sign as the main, like the yeah. key, but they did not have access to the key, and they just built it in-house.
Yeah.
And it's not that fucking complex, eh?
Yeah. No. We'll absolutely get
it. And Coinbase and like all these companies, they also built their own tool, their own solutions on how do we keep this key so that
yeah.
no
yeah.
one guy can take
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah, sure. No, that's what you have to do in those settings. But again, I think maybe we'll touch on that a little bit more the next time. Because I'm literally out of steam. I'm running on fumes. But
one last thing that I'll add is this one person that was saying, oh, Nostr is not even trying to solve these things. They are just ignoring the problem. It came up in the discussion, the idea of social recovery and out of band and, you know, like saying, oh, this is my new NPub. And five of my friends say, oh, yeah, this is the GG's new NPub. Laughing at that idea, saying that is fucking ridiculous.
No,
why would you do it like that? That's so stupid.
But that's how it works and how it always worked. Like if your identity actually got stolen, or if you lose all your passports or whatever, that's how it works. That's how it works. You go through to the family, to the friends, whatever, and they will tell you, no, that's actually the person,
yeah.
and so on. And I think a lot of people, and maybe we touch on this the next time or at some other point, a lot of people are confused about the difference. There is a difference between identity and authentication.
Mm.
They're not the same thing.
Absolutely.
And they're absolutely not the same thing. And identity, you are not in charge of your identity, really. That's like what all the postmodernist people are confused about as well. It's like people will tell you who you are or what you are in some sense. Like the people are social creatures, and your identity derives from the environment you're embedded in, and you cannot choose who you are. Again, like I made this joke already the last time, but your high school makes this very clear. You're not even in charge of your name. Like, if you're dick-face, then you're dick-face for all of school. You know, like, whatever. It's like, you can't tell other people what to call you, for example. Like, you'll get the name that whatever fits you, what other people think fits you, and so on. And so that's very, very different from authentication. I think, like, even in an Oster world, and lots of devs, I feel like, are quite confused about that, where they kind of... They mix these concepts together in some weird way, or try to come up with solutions for the whole thing, but they only have a solution for identity, or they only have a solution for authentication, and so on and so forth. So maybe that's worth exploring a little bit more, because it's, again, I think it's a problem of we're missing a lot of the... I feel like we don't have great terminology for those kind
100%.
Of things.
Absolutely.
And it's also like, you know, pseudonymity and anonymity and all those kind of things. It's like some people know that there is a difference and all those kind of stuff. And I think Nostr gives us a unique kind of possibility to explore all this some more and also normalize it. In the sense, like we mentioned it briefly last time, I think, as well. It's like, you can... Again, like, NSECs are free. You can reply as like a new person just for this one reply. You can try out a client for a week just because you don't want to potentially compromise your main account or do something stupid with your main and those kind of things. And I think it's very much worth exploring all this, because it's just a fact of the new system, and it's very different from what Facebook or Google or Apple tries you to believe, that you have one identity,
yep.
you're one thing, that's only you, and it's all-encompassing, you know? And I think that's extremely misguided from the get-go, because identity is inherently prismatic. It's like, you are not one thing. And again, like I always use the same examples. But if you go to Vegas for to Las Vegas for the weekend, you might be Steve or whatever. You know, it's like that's always how identity worked. You know, and again, like we have to. I think we have the opportunity now to model cyberspace accordingly. Model cyberspace on reality, and not make something up. like Facebook or whatever, and force everyone into the made-up world. And I think that's kind of why I'm so motivated to talk about these things, because I think we can actually do it. And
yeah, absolutely.
But the devs also have to, the people building the stuff, they need to understand this properly and understand the problem space properly, and to follow up to what you said about, we're not even trying to solve this problem. It's fine to not try and solve an impossible problem.
It's the only way to go.
Yeah.
You will expend like, all your energy
exactly.
and time.
Exactly.
You will not make a dent.
Don't waste your time trying to build a perpetual motion machine, for example. It's like, you know, have you heard that, Vitalik? Anyway. That might be a good place to end. I'm completely done.
Yeah, me
too. Any last words?
No, I think we're good. No? I tweeted a few days ago, you are not your end puff. And I was going for this
you
discussion.
Aren't. You aren't. You aren't. You absolutely aren't. Your end puff is a pointer. That's it. Maybe.
But you know, some people ask me, am I my end sick? Thinking that that's what I was going for. And you're not your insect either.
No, I have many insects. People, I mean, if people would only know. Nostra is literally like 20 people. All right, Pablo.
All right.
Let's continue this next week.